Xavier, your company has been producing high-end games. We call it embedded games because many times they are so big in terms of size that you can't download them on your phone. They're embedded, so we call them embedded games. Can you explain what your company does and how your business model works?
Yes. So we are a 3D game developer. We come originally from the PC and console industry. So we have an approach on mobile games development, which is more similar to the main industry. And we do focus on high-end quality game. We've been working as first party for Nokia since 2004. We had the chance to present Crawl at last Steve Jobs keynote when the iPhone 3G was announced. And recently on the show, we just announced an enhanced version of the game that is working on a Samsung Omnia HD. So what we see is that there will be a convergence between mobile devices and portable gaming consoles. And right now, in fact, all those smartphones are already much more powerful than a Nintendo DS, and they're getting similar or even better capability than PSP.
Thank you. And what does that mean production-wise? If you are bringing out a game like Crawl, are you saying that in the future you'll bring out the same game on PSP or on Nintendo DS or...
Yeah, in fact, if we take Crawl, the code for a PSP is exactly the same, and probably we would need to downgrade the game if we wanted to port onto DS. So just to give an example, a game like that, in terms of production, we're talking about a team around 7 to 10 people for 1 year. So it's a really complex production. But something that we're seeing now on the iPhone, for example, is that if you get a differentiation by quality, then it's rewarding in terms of return on investment. So that's a tendency that is more and more actual, and that's a line we're following.
So if you say 7 to 9 people during a year, so that means like 300,000, 400,000 euros for a game, for a mobile game. Can you how can you make that money back? How can you be profitable?
Yeah, the thing is that, first of all, in terms of install base, we're over 100 million units. And then, for example, in the case of Crawl that was launched on the iPhone, we got the money back in less than 1 month. So,
wow.
I mean, it's the figures are there. I want to say that for people that are working on native game, this is probably the biggest year, and we've never had such good conditions and ecosystem as we have right now. Yes, we are in a credit crunch period, but since the iPhone appeared, we have seen in operators a shift from Java games to native games. And now almost all industries demanding, there is a high demand on that. And you see then that the OEM, the manufacturer, so Apple has their App Store, Engage, I mean Nokia has the Engage store, and now they announce the OVE.com store. So they have their own channels. And I hope that carriers now will bet more and more for native games.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Let's have another look at the trailer. Maybe it works better now. We'll have a look at that later. Alex, your company is very similar to Digital Legends. You're in the same sort of high quality space, but your company is also not a middleware company, but you are. You're also like a technical facilitator with some very sophisticated tools.
That's correct. I mean, we started off as a technology business, but just like Xavier's company, we started building some games for Nokia back in 2003 when they launched Engage at first. And we came, we looked at the market and came to the conclusion that yes, the silicon, the processors, the screens, everything were going to go through a massive repeat of Moore's law on mobile phones, but at a much faster pace than in PC world, because the replacement cycles are much higher. And we've certainly seen that, and anyone who's walked around the show today can see some really incredible examples of what can be done with silicon. The problem really is that in mobiles, the structure of the, at a technical level, of the hardware, operating system, and software, is very, very different to PC worlds and extremely different to the games industry. In the games industry, games companies are used to a very stable platform that doesn't change over a long period of time, and that gives them freedom to concentrate on development and not to concentrate on things that are specific to the hardware. On mobiles, it's absolutely the other way around. The hardware is incredibly complex. There are lots of different operating systems, different business models, etc. And that is cramping creativity. And you see instances where it's opened up and there's a huge influx of creativity and content. I mean, the App Store, everyone goes on about it on the iPhone, but it's remarkable that in a period of 8 months, it went from standing start to 15,000 apps, 500 million downloads, and all the figures we all know about. And that really is as an example that when you open the gates, then people will invest and come up with some amazing content. So we're concentrating on trying to solve the problem caused by fragmentation by building a framework that does that, and we do it in the game space, because not only are games probably the most important category of content, certainly the category that gets most easily monetized, but it's also the most difficult to build, and therefore we feel if we solve it for games, then we can provide a solution which is meaningful in the marketplace. So that's what we do. So I think, like a lot of games companies, technology is a very large part of it, but also creativity too.
Thank you. We try to fix something here. Just one second. Okay, we will show the videos later, because they're very, very good videos. Now, Volker, can you tell us a little bit about Connect to Media? Very different company from Digital Legends. And ideally, you're a publisher. You're not developer.
We also develop.
Okay.
But we are basically looking at the more complex end of the market. Very much a mass market focused publisher. We publish everything from Guitar Hero for mobile all the way through Edge and a couple of other much more casual games that we do believe people that are not only hardcore gamers, very committed gamers, that will actually go out into the city and play synchronously in very immersive environments. Therefore, we are being constrained by the huge complexity of the marketplace. Every game needs to be ported across to something like 600 different handsets. Once you do that, as Alex rightly says, you do face constraints with a view to the game, what works on a very high-end device from the year 2009 might not work on a 3-year-old device that my 13-year-old son carries around with him. And we are required to address both ends of the market, both by the carriers who want to make sure that all their customers are being served, and by the OEMs who want to make sure that their their devices are not irrelevant only because they're a year old.
Thank you. We'll come back to these points later, but I would like to ask Dan Keegan, head of games since
1897.
Right from the beginning.
It's not true.
It's not true?
I'm not quite that old, but...
No, but you were working for Orange already. in 97, weren't you?
I was probably, don't say that, it means I'm moonlighting at the time, but certainly been here for quite a few years, and it's been a real pleasure actually to work in this environment, almost like a frontier environment, the early days, the early pioneers, SMS games, WAP games, black and white. I mean, the innovators were out there, I would say, before the railroads were actually built, because we were still struggling as an industry to actually build a delivery platform, a billing techniques, and actually get customers into the shop. And so it's just been a remarkable 5-6 year period. And right now, the innovation we see is just incredible, more so than any other multimedia category. Obviously, I'm biased because I'm working games, and I think my panelists would agree, but it's just breathtaking, really. It's not so much a question of what games do we play as and which games don't we play. And I thought the submissions to the IMGA awards were incredibly strong because of the iPhone. But also the quality of the content, which was not actually part of the final selection, was just incredible because there's so many new genres and exciting experiences. So I would say from an operator or retailer perspective, we remain completely committed to this area. And we've actually, I don't think people truly know the extent of France Telecom's commitment. We have a Goa.com mobile games division. We are a publisher of Warhammer from Mythic EA. There's a very large team dedicated to this area. And last year it was a period of growth. Even if you don't include the iPhone contribution to the overall market. So I think it's really an excellent period. Maybe it's a form of third wave in terms of the mobile games evolution. So I think we've got good times ahead, although obviously there's been a short period of difficulty due to wider circumstances.
Thank you. So that all sounds very, very positive. And now, if you look beyond this year, like 2012, what kind of games do you think we will be playing? From your point of view, then?
I'm probably, as a sort of retailer, I guess I'm the one person to answer that. I think my colleagues here, my panelists here can answer better. I think, for me, our priority is really making sure the access and discovery is improved. That's our main target, and also the making sure that the value is right for the customer, because, of course, there's a prevailing model of full price, and it is successful, but there's different ways to consume, and I think that's for us, it's our responsibility to the market to make sure that we work with enablers and third parties to get that experience right. I think I was to comment on what sort of games customers play in the future or we enjoy. I'd be in the wrong part of the business, I think. I should step over and join a publisher, because I'm constantly surprised by the innovation.
So how do you see retailing involved? You know, we have the Apple Store, we have the Ovi Store, site loading, you know, all sorts of new business models, free games, virtual item buying, what have you. How do you think the way people will buy games or acquire games, how will that change in the future?
So this is why we're quite confident in the growth, certainly in the short term. We see it very much on device. So you could say that iPhone is an excellent example of an on device experience for a trusted brand, which is very important. So right now we're preparing for that sort of switch. We can quite clearly see the customer prefers the easiest form of purchasing, which is via the device. There's a large percentage of customers who are concerned about maybe the cost of traffic, data traffic, and the time it takes. And one of our group members, who's exceptionally high quality actually at the moment, Orange France, they're seeing now quite clearly over 50% of all sales coming from the device. There's some side benefits of that. There's having the games icon on the home screen of the device is a massive driver. But getting more games links, on-device portals, these are all working and really pushing up the sales ratios. So we see, I guess in our part, we can quite clearly see we can mostly control our destiny in growing the market. And then, of course, there's the subscription offering, which would be very compelling to customers, particularly in prepaid, who maybe don't have enough credit or want to retain some credit for their main part of the phone call, which is making calls to people they know. So there's a lot more we can do, certainly in Western Europe.
Thank you very much. I think Falk would like to comment on what he has just heard. Being on the other side of the...
Being on the other side of the fence, yeah. Well, we believe that just everybody plays and everybody communicates. That's what people do. People play from when they're babies and all the time when you're 90 and you're sitting around playing bridge or pizza or... So that is something that's very natural to people, but they do in social contexts, and that to do that we need to connect them. So connected gaming is something where I believe we will see a lot that doesn't necessarily have to be real time multiplayer gaming. That can be asynchronous, but it needs to connect. Into the social context that people seek. In order to achieve that, we're looking to carriers, as Dan well knows. We're looking to also, but less to OEMs, with a view to provide the environment to enable that pricing. Was mentioned data charges, flexible pricing, and the throughput and discovery. On the pricing model. You've got to imagine this at the moment as being, you go into a supermarket and there are 1,000 products and they all cost either 3 euros or 5 euros. That's it. So you have a litre of milk and that is maybe 3 euros, and you have a bread and that's 5 euros. There is no 50 cents, there is no product for 10 euros, which is... something that makes it fairly difficult to produce a compelling customer proposition. At the moment, at least in very wide parts of the market, it is the old trusted ways of marketing and selling are actually not really applicable. And I do believe that this is also one part of the big success of the App Store and the iPhone, because there the publisher is completely free. You can adapt your pricing from free to whatever you want. You can do this yourself at very short notice. I'm not necessarily a fan of this slang Wild West free for all, but I do think that the flexibility is an important piece of that. And then I believe we will manage to connect the various media screens, because the mobile phones is the largest communication device and the largest media screen by a factor of more than three. There's roughly three times as many mobile phones in the world as there are TV sets, and it is interactive. So we should use this to build the backbones, but basically allow people to play. And digital ways.
Thank you, Alex. Listening to this, you have some experience in Japan. You worked with Konami in the past. You've published games in Asia. Do you think we can learn something from the Asian system, or the Asian way the ecosystem works?
I think so. But I think that, I mean, a few years ago, we looked over to Japan and thought, my goodness, they've got broadband, they've got more powerful handsets, the market there's going to be a lot more sophisticated than here. The fact is that, you know, we caught up very much. In fact, I think that there's, you know, a considerable amount of innovation happening outside of Japan. You know, the Japanese market also is very different, and I think this is an important factor that you can't, you know, just as the hardware and processes are fragmented, so, you know, we're dealing with the world, people behave very differently, they consume content very differently. You know, Japan, people don't have, you know, there's not much fixed line internet, and therefore people are browsing the internet with their handsets much more freely than they do in the West, and that functionality came on very early. You know, they still suffer from problems that we have over here. Discovery on what handsets in Japan is not that good. and they have very, very difficult platforms to work with, which we've worked across all the platforms there, and they're not consistent at all. But nonetheless, I think you know, the potential there is huge. Certainly, Entity Docomo has shown an incredible example of how, if you get the ecosystem right, you build a massive development community. And you know, they've basically created a whole economy around their service. But I think there are other parts of the world to look to too. I mean, in the third world countries are particularly interesting because, you know, whereas in first world countries, the phone competes with other digital devices for gaining content, such as the DS or the PSP. In third world countries, that's less the case. And I think that there are tremendous opportunities for providing entertainment via mobile phones in India or China and elsewhere, where, you know, the install base of existing hardware just isn't there, and people will come up with much more, you know, things that may seem crazy to us, but simply because they don't have access to other forms of entertainment, become totally natural there.
Thank you. Xavier, you're also working in Japan right now with the title Crawl. What's it called in Japanese?
It's called Toryu, which means the Sword of Dragon.
Can you tell us a little bit about that production or co-production?
Yes. So we've been working with Japan and Korea for the past years, and we've realized that content-wise, those countries are extremely... there is a very important cultural impact. So whatever, if you try to bring to those countries Occidental content, it may fail, because they have extremely have rules on how a character should be. And I remember we had very good games, and they say, no, we don't like that game. And say, why? I say, no, the characters, they have a thick neck. And that was for them a showstopper. So if you want to produce content for those specific countries, meaning Korea and Japan, I think you need to integrate their cultural sensibility. And the only way to do that is to whether work with the local team there, whether have locals in your development.
So you confirm that the mobile games development is a global business. As a studio, you have to be able to do that kind of thing to survive.
Yeah, I think it's the only way. I mean, we are a small studio, but we have more than 10 nationalities. And so we need to... I mean, basically, with the digital distribution, the good thing is that you can be based, like us in Barcelona, but you're distributing content over 130 countries. You need to be ready to localize. We're localizing now in 8+ languages. And it's getting even more and more into the eastern part. So we're getting more and more demand for, you know, Chinese. We're getting more and more demand now for content for India. And that's now to be taken into account from the very early stage of the design.
Ah, it's very interesting. Now, in terms of Alex, if you think about context-aware gaming, I wanted to talk about that, context-aware gaming, pervasive gaming, all these new kind of games that are coming up, like the Ghostwire game that I just showed. What do you see coming to the market? How do you see the gaming experience change in the next, let's say, 2 to 3 years?
I think you just need to look at your phone and see what it can do. I mean, you know, phones now have GPS in, they've got cameras and so forth. That's been around for a little while. What needs to happen next is for access to that functionality to be readily available to developers, and then let them play. I mean, there are all sorts of ideas that we've come up with. You know, some may be implemented. It's a difficult thing to figure out, because you need to add in, you know, the cost of delivery. So, for instance, in, you know, the game that we did, which was which we were involved in developing, which was Metal Gear Solid for Konami, we built a lot of camera functionality, and we ended up finding that it was extremely complex to get that camera functionality to work across all the cameras. But once we did it, it was great. and the response to it was tremendous. You're going to see a number of companies sort of cutting the ground doing that. But I think it's fair to say that the phone is unique as a device because it has functionality that other devices don't have. And I think the other thing which is exciting about it from looking to the future is that it's a very social device. I mean, people that have games on their handsets show them off to other people, they talk about them. It has an intrinsic viral quality for distribution. So I think we're going to be able to see, yes, big brands will always have that part, but I think we're going to see some remarkable emergence of unbranded content that just simply spreads virally very, very fast. And I think that's very exciting because if you marry that potential with good business models and stable technology, and I believe the technology is going to stabilize, then you provide a breeding ground for creative ideas, which I don't believe you're going to see on any other device. So I mean, my hope is that our discussion a few years from now about 2.5 billion euros of market size in a couple of years' time, we'll be laughing at it. I mean, it is possible that it could be considerably larger.
Thank you. Xavier, what is your idea on this? How do you see concepts evolve?
Yeah, what I see is that the phone is becoming a substitute of the handheld console. And at the same time, it's targeting a wider audience. So I think you will have both all the catalog, the classic catalog from the console, are now will be more and more available on the phone. We're seeing that on the iPhone. But at the same time, I agree with Alex that you will use phone-specific features. You mentioned camera. We can use now the touchscreen, accelerometer, connectivity, and this is something pretty unique. And I would say that with the phone, you can do something that you've never achieved with any device, which is you could maybe enter into this real persistent world. So world that are evolving and you can be notified at any time something is happening there. So you're really bringing that world with you in your pocket. So I think it's opening huge opportunity in terms of gameplays and in terms of business as well.
Thank you. Volker, the question I'd like to ask you is, it's more related to the names, the company Connect Media. Do you see a future of mobile games that is completely converged, like you play with TV, you play with handheld, do you think we are going to that kind of future?
We've been publishing 2 years ago now a game that is playable mobile to mobile, web to mobile, completely seamlessly for the World Poker Tour Texas Hold'em game for free, no gambling in it, which today has about 1.5 million players on the platform. It's still going strong after 2 years. We're currently working on the next iteration of that. It is, from consumers' perspective, I don't actually think that they care that much what screen it is. They will, when it comes to games, to playing, they will look at gameplay and game mechanic that they like and that is compelling. They will look at things recommended to them by friends or at brands they know. Then when they happen to be on the mobile at a mobile screen, is most of the time, because 91% or so of people never have their mobile more than a meter away from them, then they will arguably prefer to play it on their mobile. If you play a very immersive game like World of Warcraft, 21-inch it probably gives you a better gaming experience. But what I think we as game publishers increasingly look to is treat the mobile as one media screen used for gaming, and I think it's the most powerful one because it has this beautiful, unique factor of actually being with you all the time. So I think that is where the future what should be. That's where gaming naturally should evolve towards.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Because we still have 2 minutes, so we can take a couple of questions from the audience. questions. I don't think there are.
You're all asleep.
Then I think, Dan, the future of mobile games looks very bright, and for both from the development side, as from the publishing side, and from the retail side. Can you explain how important games are for an operator, and how important the mobile games, the future mobile games, is for Orange specifically?
Oh well, I mean, as I said at the beginning, it's a major growth area for us, consistent growth, and we value every part of the value chain, and we remain committed to it. We really are encouraged by what we've seen last year, and the new entrants, and the fact that companies such as Apple have brought trust as well. Customers trust the actual relationship, which is so important in any retail category. And I see quite a lot of growth. I do see some areas which could be improved as well. I would say to, if there are developers in the audience, I think there was a statement by Stuart from Pocket Gamer about how we should treat maybe the small emerging iPhone brands, like games, more like mini rock stars in terms of how they're marketed. And it was a bit off-field because, you know, the music market's maybe not the most best comparison at the moment. But there's a lot of truth in that, and maybe it's because there's these developers focused on technology, and then there's an opportunity to improve the marketing at such an early stage.
Well, I'd like to very briefly answer that. I believe that games provided a tremendous opportunity to both carriers but also OEMs, because users interact with both the handset and the network rather than just consume. So it will actually remove hurdles with a view to any reservations they might have to use the full power of the devices and the networks that we have out there. So as that, games are I think a very, very good tool to do that from where other even non-gaming applications and services can evolve.
Well, thank you very much. Our time is over, unfortunately. Thank you very much.